This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, Bills Mafia. We know there's only one topic every day. All Bills, all the time. And now Matt Bove and Sal Capaccio are going really deep, talking Bills all year long, because it's always game day in Buffalo.
All right, it's always game day in Buffalo. Sal Capaccio, Matt Bove, one of our favorite episodes every year. Matt and I were able to do this last year, but I've been able to do this for the last several years, even before that, and it's one of our favorite conversations of the year. Before we get to our special guest, Matt, I told you, I was in Australia when Stephon Diggs was traded. My wife woke me up at 6 a.m. Well, I happened to be coaching a Little League baseball game when I had my phone was not on. And then I looked at it late in the game and I said, wait a minute, the Sabres just hired Lindy Ruff. So apparently things love to happen and break in Buffalo while I'm not available.
I was on the 14th hole at Niagara Falls Country Club golfing, and I had a really nice round going together, and this one rattled me. This rattled me a little bit. So if the Sabres could have waited a little bit longer, it would have been appreciated. But now that will dominate the news cycle for the next couple of days, and then obviously there's plenty of other things going on for sure.
One of the things I love to do every year is when the NHL schedule comes out, I like to compare it with the NFL schedule and say, boy, are the Sabres in the same city as the Bills that weekend? And a guy here that can help us break down the NFL schedule from A to Z, how it works and what to maybe expect, is NFL VP of Broadcasting, Mike North. Mike, thanks a lot for doing this again. We always appreciate you joining us. It's one of our favorite conversations of the year.
My absolute pleasure. I have no idea where the Sabres are going to be this
fall. Well, we don't expect you to know that, but I'm sure you have some clues on the Bills, but you're not going to necessarily reveal them to us. Can you reveal when you think we're going to know the schedule this year? What does it look like as far as dates?
Yeah, look, our target is always kind of that, second week in May. The truth is you got to leave just a little bit of room just in case something happens in the draft that we want to react to and maybe adjust. We've been grinding, obviously, for all day, every day for a couple of months now, and kind of trying to think about landing the planes and get somewhere where we're all comfortable. But there's still some open issues in the league. There's still some questions that, we're waiting on answers for, and those are probably going to shape the final couple of weeks here. So, somewhere in the May 10, 12, 15, somewhere in those first part of May, depending, I think, in part on how we're going to react to what happens in the draft in Detroit.
Mike, when does the process start? When do you guys really start to kind of figure out the pieces and put it all together and say, okay, here's kind of like a working draft of what we think the schedule could look like? And then how does the process look, as you said, in these final weeks as we get closer?
Yeah, it's evolved over my time with the league. I'm coming up on 30 seasons with Big Shield. And when I started, and really for, call it the first 8 or 10 years of my career, the schedule was built essentially by hand, one game at a time, and kind of top down, bottom up, and then kind of just put the middle together and hope everybody's got a game every week. So you felt like the beginning part of the schedule was strong. You start us up a few division series, you get the primetime partners off to a good start. You tell the stories you want to tell that you think are better told in September. And then in the back end, you kind of just load up the division games. That's sort of how we keep all the races tight. And any big games, big brands, you know, big national followings where you feel like, hey, that's probably going to hold up and have playoff implications if you put it on the schedule for December in May. And then the middle just kind of gets like, hey, I hope it all comes together. I hope everybody's got a game every week. Now the computers do so much of the work. The schedule kind of builds inside out instead of top down and bottom up. And so you get a feel for, hey, that's a pretty strong NBC schedule, or hey, it looks like we're going to be able to do right by Amazon this year. Or, wow, the CBS 425 doubleheader windows are loaded this year. But how does it all exactly come together, and which game is in which week, and how do you sequence it, and who should be early and who should be late? It's a lot more fluid than it used to be. So could I tell you right now that we're holding a schedule in our hand that we all love, and if the commissioner said, I want to put it out on Friday, we're ready? Yeah, maybe, but not really. That's not how we do it anymore. So it's really more about, are we guiding the computers? Are we guiding the search into the right branches of the search tree? And then, you know what? That San Fran Buffalo game really needs a bigger home. Why don't we exclude it from landing there and try to get it someplace bigger? Not necessarily saying it must be that network on that week, but just feels like there should be a bigger home for a game like that, and then multiply that conversation by all the biggest games, and then try to guess which games maybe aren't looking in May as, you know, home runs from a viewership standpoint, but have an opportunity to, if this quarterback plays well, if that team's in a playoff chance, so playoff race. So it's fluid, a lot more so than it used to be, and it's not really built sequentially anymore. So it's almost like we're nowhere, we're done. And it's weird for people to try to get their arms around, geez, 2 days ago, we didn't have one, and now we've got two or three that we all agree are excellent. Commissioner, which one do you like the best?
Who determines the preseason schedule, Mike? Is that solely done by the league itself? Do the teams have any say in that?
The teams have a lot of say, actually. Now that we're down only three games in the preseason, what the teams came to us when we went to 17-3 was, look, this is still about football readiness for us, and we're only going to have one home game every other year and two home games the other. This isn't so much about, you know, the national television schedule the way the regular season schedule is. It's more about football readiness. So every club gets to partner up with another club, grab a dance partner for a certain week of the preseason, and say, hey, let's ask the league to have us play each other, either at my place or your place, and let's practice together in the week leading up. Yep. So every club gets to find a dance partner and say, hey, we're going to play each other in Buffalo in week two. Those two guys are going to play each other in Atlanta in week three. We take all that in from the clubs. We take the stadium blocks, the travel considerations, also some of the early season, you know, week one stuff. We know that, you know, Kansas City's playing on Thursday, obviously a week one. Who might they be playing? You know, they should be have a little consideration for where are they playing the third week of the preseason. We've got a couple teams going to Brazil now,
yep,
in week one of the regular season. We should have some consideration about where they're playing week three of the preseason. So we get some feedback from the clubs, kind of like a starting point, and then from there we build out the rest of the schedule. It's still on us. It used to be, you guys probably remember this, it used to be the clubs did it all themselves. Mm-hmm. They would go out and find four teams to play in the 4 weeks of the preseason, and inevitably you'd get down and like everybody would submit their lists and here's my games and we're all done. And you'd be left with two teams without a dance partner, and they both need a home game in preseason week three. Otherwise, the puzzle doesn't finish. So we had to end up undoing it just to get one done. And it was decided, hey, we'll take over preseason like we do regular, but tell us what's really important to you from a football readiness standpoint, and we'll accommodate that.
All right. So I know we're going to talk about that Brazil game for sure, but let's refresh everybody's memories on some of the rules here. They've kind of massaged over the years how many primetime games you can get, the different kind of days and nights you can play on and things like that. Let's just first tell us again and refresh our memories. How many primetime games can a team get, and what qualifies as a primetime game? And is everybody guaranteed to get at least one?
The notion of primetime has a little different meaning now, to your point. Like, is, yep, a Saturday afternoon game on NFL Network primetime? Is a Sunday morning 9:30 a.m. game in the UK primetime? The answer is it's less about primetime than it is about not being played on Sunday afternoon. Okay. So the way we look at it is less about primetime and more about, like, literally a takeaway. In our old television contracts, that was literally a term in the deals, takeaway, because all the AFC road teams, those games belong to CBS, and all the NFC road teams, those games belong to Fox. And if we want a game for Sunday night or Thursday night or Monday night or Sunday morning or Saturday afternoon, we'd literally have to take it away from CBS or Fox. And so there were rules about how many times you could take away each team, total number of games you could take away. That's all gone. everything's a jump ball. Everything's a toss up. Every game could be played on any network, any window, any week of the year. What it really comes down to at the end is a minimum number of appearances per team on each of the partners. So CBS, still the home of the AFC, they get the vast majority of the Bills and Patriots and Jets and Dolphins games. The Fox is still the home of the NFC. They get the overwhelming majority of the Cowboys and Bears and Niners and Packers games. But NBC gets an opportunity to squat on a few teams X number of times. ESPN has a list. Amazon has a list. We are trying to build out our international offerings and source really good games for our international fans, particularly as we start to expand where we're playing these games. You know, the fans in the UK, you guys have been over, the fans in the UK know and are used to it, and they show up and they don't cheer quite as much for punts as they used to, but they get it. But now we're going to Brazil for the first time. How big a game do you need to bring to break through in Brazil? We've been to Germany a few times. You know, sending the Chiefs over there last year was kind of a watershed moment, seeing, you know, 20,000 Chiefs fans marching down the street to the stadium. Like, you can see that the fans over there are getting savvy enough that it's hard to just keep sending some of the, you know, less compelling games. We need to step up the offerings. And so those games are coming out of Sunday afternoons and Sunday nights and Monday nights and Thursday nights. So everybody's got to play a minimum number across all the partners. Your question about the how many primetime games can they have? Again, that's less about how many times you're actually playing at night. That's really more of a fan friendliness question than anything else. You know, to ask the outdoor cold weather stadium fan to turn up 4, 5, 6 times for a night game is probably beyond what we're going to do. I think we're going to try to keep scheduled as 6 night games, so no more than 3 of them in your home stadium, and really shouldn't have, you know, all your December games be played outdoors in the snow, in the cold. I'm sure your coach would like it, but that's not really right for the fan, and just trying to balance that across 32 teams, 18 weeks, 7 network partners. It's really less about how many primetime games do I get and how many games are of mine are not being deployed on Sunday afternoon being used elsewhere.
Mike, I've heard the narrative before that like networks can protect games, and I've never really understood if that's true or not. And I don't think I got to ask you about this last year, so I'm interested in it, because a couple of years ago, the Bills and the Chiefs play that all-time great AFC divisional game, and everybody thinks, well, the next year, that's got to be a primetime game, and then it's a 425 CBS game. And then a bunch of people say, well, CBS got a chance to protect that game. And then last year, once again, the Bills and Chiefs was a 425 CBS game. Do networks get to protect games from their competitors?
Not in May. All the decisions that are being made when the schedule comes out in May, league office decision, Commissioner Goodell decision. Nobody gets to protect anything now. They can ask, they can encourage, they can request, they can twist arms. They have very long memories, and they might remind us, hey, we haven't had this game in 6 years, or you took this game away from us last time. You know, when Tom Brady was at the Patriots and Peyton Manning was at the Colts and the Patriots played each other every year, we sort of had like a little bit of a rotation. Like, it was on Sunday night 1 year, CBS the next. Sunday night 1 year, CBS the next. Mm-hmm. All that's out the window now. Again, every game's a jump ball. Nobody protects anything in April and May. Schedule comes out. Once the schedule is released, though, once the season gets rolling, when we get into the weeks of flexible scheduling, when we might be able to change a game for the Sunday night, the Monday night, or the Thursday night game in any week, that's when the Sunday afternoon partners, CBS and Fox, each get one protection each week. So if we decide to put Buffalo, Kansas City on CBS, and it's in week 9 through 17, when we get to those weeks, if we're thinking about a flexible scheduling change for Sunday night, Monday night, or Thursday night, then we go to CBS and we say, hey, if we're going to make a change to one of the primetime packages, we need you to tell us which is the one game each week you want to protect. Do you want to protect Buffalo, Kansas City in week 9? The answer to that is, of course we do. Thank you so much for giving it to us in May.
Right.
So nobody gets a protection now. Nobody squats on anything. They do have some minimum appearance rules, and that plays into some of what the league is thinking about when they're building this schedule. You can, you know, kill two birds with one stone if you put a big Kansas City 425 game against Buffalo on CBS in week 9. But CBS doesn't get to squat on that yet. If it's scheduled for CBS, then when we get to it, they would get to protect it.
What do you mean by minimum appearance rules?
Well, again, CBS is going to get a minimum number of Chiefs games each year,
okay,
a minimum number of Bills games each year. You put a Bills-Chiefs game on CBS, that checks two boxes for us, knowing we've got to get to our minimums for Buffalo and Kansas City. If we decide to take the Buffalo-Kansas City game and put it on Sunday night, now you have a hole in your CBS schedule for Kansas City and a hole in your CBS schedule for Buffalo. And how do you end up filling those holes? And maybe it's two games, and maybe those two games combined don't equal the value to CBS of the one Buffalo-Kansas City game. But we're not doing our jobs if we're not looking at hundreds, thousands of schedules. We should look at Buffalo-Kansas City on Sunday night. We should look at Buffalo-Kansas City as a CBS doubleheader. It should be in the mix for a Fox doubleheader. It should be in the mix for Monday Night Football. It should be in the mix for Thursday Night Football. What's the best use of all 272 games, not just the best use of the Buffalo-Kansas City?
Can you tell us the minimum number, or is that fluid?
It's fluid. It's fluid, okay, not only by team, but it's fluid by year.
Okay.
So that CBS can react in a year. You know, everybody's wondering who's the next big team. Like, let's not forget, like 10 years ago, Kansas City was not Kansas City. So, you know, this year, of course, it's Kansas City. But 3 years, 5 years from now, maybe CBS doesn't want to be trapped into having Kansas City as their extra appearance team. Maybe Pittsburgh, maybe the Jets, maybe the Bills, whoever it is that is the primary focus for them in each given year, they've got the opportunity each year to adjust who they get the maximum number of appearances from.
Mike, I have one big picture question, and then, you know, we can talk more logistics. I'm fascinated by storytelling, and you even said it at the beginning of this podcast. You need to tell a story, and you have all of these opportunities to tell a story. What does the league value in storytelling? What's at the top of the list of like, okay, we know this is what we need to accomplish, and this is what we prioritize? Because as a consumer and also somebody who covers the league, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, obviously every game has a story to it, but some games have a bigger story than others. And if there's something that the fans are really interested in, this Buffalo Kansas City game that you're talking about, it's a good barometer. You put that game on Sunday Night Football and it probably does 23 to 25 million viewers. That's an awful lot of people who are going to be willing to stay awake Sunday night until, you know, 11:30 at night on the East Coast, hopefully after having watched the 1 o'clock window and the 4 o'clock window that day, and maybe even a 9:30 a.m. window that day. Like, you're talking about 12 hours of NFL football. That's asking a lot. So you put a game like Buffalo Kansas City on Sunday night, that probably gives people a reason to stay and tune in and watch. You put that game on Sunday afternoon, CBS, Fox, 425, you actually probably beat that number. You probably get closer to 30 million. So is that a better use of that asset? We're trying to grow the Amazon brand and shift consumer behavior and help people find Amazon Prime on a Thursday night. You want people to find Amazon Prime? You know, put Bills Chiefs there. People will find it, right? Look at what we did with Peacock last year when you put a Chiefs playoff game on Peacock. Our fans will find the games that they care about. So we need to know which games they care the most about. And they tell us every day. They tell us every time they interact with the league, every time they call into one of your shows, every time they post something on social media, every time they change their quarterback on their fantasy team, every time they buy a hat or a t-shirt or a ticket, every time they follow somebody on Instagram, every time they place a legal bet, every time they interact with the league, they're telling us what's important to them. And if we're not listening, then we're not doing our jobs. If we took that Buffalo Kansas City game and we put it on CBS at 1 o'clock Eastern, in a window with eight other NFL games, and that game might only be available then in 28, 29, 30% of the country, that's not the best use of that asset. That game belongs to our fans. We're not doing our jobs if we're putting it in a place where as many fans as possible can't see it. So which of the games with the most storylines? Is it quarterbacks returning to their old teams? Is it coaches returning to their old teams? Is it rookies playing their first game in prime time? Is it rematches of playoff games like you mentioned? Like, what are those biggest games? What are the must-see TV games? And then can you spread them out across all the partners, all the weeks? Can you have something every week that feels like a story game? And then we, the NFL, has to do a good job, and our broadcast partners have to do a good job marketing it, promoting it, reminding people this game is this week. Tune in. Once the game starts, out of our hands, right? 21-0 at the end of the first quarter. Maybe people are going to turn the TV off. But that doesn't seem to happen that much in this league anymore. Right. Everybody's, you know, so well coached, and the analytics and you know, just doesn't seem like blowouts happen anymore. So we got to do everything we can to identify those storylines, work with our partners to promote them and market them, get people to the television at kickoff, and then hope the game is good enough to keep them there. We have made it really easy to follow the game without watching the game, right? You don't have to sit there for 3 hours, but within 2 minutes of the final gun on your phone, you got all the highlights you need, all the playoff implications, all the touchdowns, all the fantasy implications, all the officiating controversies. Like, it's all right here within minutes. What do we have to do to make you sit there and watch it for 3 hours? We got to make it compelling. We got to get the big storyline games into the biggest windows so the fans are going to get a chance to see the games they want to see.
Mike North, NFL VP of Broadcasting here, and it's always game day in Buffalo. All right, you brought up Peacock. We know also this year they will be the home of the first ever game in Brazil. That game's going to be week one, Friday night. You have Thursday night kickoff, Friday night in Brazil. Big picture question on Brazil. You can kind of just tell us how it all came together, what it's all about. Why on Peacock, and how did you determine the teams playing in there? In fact, we had a question tweeted into us. I opened up some questions and told people, hey, if you want to ask Mike a question, we have a listener named Charlie who's in Brazil. He said, I'd like to know how you determine the international games, popularity for those teams. Why did you choose Eagles, Packers? And I'd like to know why I'm Peacock.
Yep. Let's go all the way back to the beginning. How do we end up in Brazil in the first place? Yep. You know, we've been playing in the UK since I think 2006, maybe something like that. So we've been over there pretty regularly. And it went from, I think, I don't want to say a burden, but I think the team saw it as a, you know, a challenge or maybe an inconvenience, but now they embrace it. We literally have teams raising their hands as soon as they see, you know, who's been designated as the home team. Oh, we play them at their place. Hey, we would love to go overseas. We had a great experience of when we went over there last time, 3 years ago, 5 years ago. We'd love to go over there again. So everybody gets it. Plus, you heard we're expanding our footprint international. Like, we might be up to 6, 7, 8 games internationally at some point. That's half the league playing international games. So everybody's going to kick in. Everybody's going to, you know, take their turn. And I think the more they can embrace it, the better. And the teams are starting to figure out which of these foreign countries and foreign markets are good for them to have some marketing rights. And you can put, you know, your logos in certain places, build a fan base over there. And then, like we saw with Kansas City last year, the market's so excited for your team to finally come over there. So all the teams are getting behind it. The owners all voted for the new resolution, which is going to allow us to source a lot more games. So now it becomes, hey, you got more games in your hand to deploy internationally. Where do you want to play them? And the question became, well, who has the infrastructure to support, you know, an NFL game? You're talking about a 60, 70,000 seat stadium with the wide enough footprint for our field, big enough locker rooms for our very large mammals who play this game. We've got to have, you know, practice facilities and hotels and an airport. And there's a growing list, but it's not an infinite list of places where we could play games. So everybody kind of reaches out to us or we reach out to them. And, you know, this year it's Sao Paulo, Brazil. Next year it's Madrid, Spain. And coming down the road, you could see some pretty incredible stuff, whether it's Italy or France or, you know, Asia, UAE. There's a lot of really exciting, interesting options coming down the road. But Brazil was, you know, ready. I think that was the biggest thing. They were ready. They were eager. They believe they can, you know, put on a good game. We're playing in the Corinthians football stadium. So we needed to ensure that Corinthians was off that weekend. We needed to ensure that the Brazilian national soccer team, I don't remember if it's Gold Cup or World Cup, but they're actually playing that weekend too. But I think they're going to end up playing Thursday. So we can get in there, play in Brazil on Friday with kind of a clear picture for us. How do we pick the teams? Well, the conference that has the 9 home games is the conference from which we source the home teams for the international game. So it had to be an NFC team. So reached out to basically everybody and just started talking about, hey, you know, you got to go. You know, you want to go. Where do you want to go? Would you be interested? Would this be the year? And then you start looking at what the right matchups might be, which teams are most excited. What do we do for them in terms of where are they, like we said, preseason week 3, regular season week 2? Can we get you home after that long trip? Have you been before? What's your coach think about it? What's your owner think about it? And the Eagles really have been eager from day one. They've been really excited to do this. I can't vouch for, you know, the Eagles fan following in Brazil, but I know that the Eagles are one of our popular, you know, international teams these days. Obviously making a couple of deep playoff runs the last couple of years. So there's plenty of Eagles fans in Brazil. And then the question becomes, well, who's the opponent going to be? And Do you want to go really big, something like a Packers, a Steelers, you know, something like that? Could you go with something maybe not quite as, you know, jump off the page, A-plus level, and still check your boxes in terms of what you're trying to accomplish here? And what's the ripple effect on the rest of the NFL schedule? If this game is going to be played in week one, depending on which network it's going to be, you put a game like Packers-Eagles there, that's a pretty powerful asset that you now do not have to deploy for a Sunday night game or a Monday night game or later in the season. So had to feel pretty good that we could, you know, quote unquote, afford to put one of our really better games there. And then once we started kicking around Peacock as a broadcast home, this is Friday night of week one. So the game didn't belong to any of our existing packages. This is a new one. And so kind of talk to all the broadcast partners and, hey, would you be interested? And what do you think the, you know, opportunity is for you? And Peacock, kind of like they did last year with the playoff game, really stepped up, really thought they could bring an awful lot of marketing and promotional push behind it to what we were saying before. Who can get people to the television Friday night at 8 o'clock Eastern time? Well, NBC is going to have an awful lot of people watching the Olympics all summer long. They're going to have the kickoff game on Thursday night. And they were able to get 23-24 million people to watch the playoff game on Peacock last year. They've proven they can deliver broadcast television level viewership for a good NFL game. They've earned this right to take a shot at a new window for us. And who knows if it's successful, you might even see us in that window again next year.
Who has the Christmas game this year, and how does that?
That's a great question. You want it?
Yeah.
You want it?
No. Oh, goodness gracious! I thought you meant network.
No.
He meant the network, but I don't think Bills fans want the game. We don't want the Christmas game.
As we sit here today on April 22nd, not only do we not know the teams, we do not know the broadcast partners. Everybody's very interested. Over these last couple of years, you've seen NFL viewership for Christmas Day really kind of explode. And we might even talked about this before. Like, I don't think we went into this season thinking we were going to play on Christmas. It's a Wednesday, right? We don't play on Wednesday unless, you know, something weird happens during COVID. Like, we went into this season not really leaning into, you know, playing on Christmas. But when you see the viewership levels that we were able to generate last year for a Chiefs game, an Eagles game, and then that Baltimore San Fran game, you know, you're talking about 25, 28, 29, 30 million people watching on Christmas Day. Like, that feels like too big of an opportunity to pass up. So the owners talked about it at the meeting back in March, and they all agreed, yep, we should figure out a way to get to Wednesday. It's going to require games being played on the previous Saturday. We do Sunday to Thursday all the time. This would be Saturday to Wednesday. So those are, you know, new windows for us and trying to figure out which teams make the most sense and which broadcast partners make the most sense. And again, they're new windows. They're kind of out of thin air. So talking to all the broadcast partners, you know, not just broadcast streaming, talking to everybody, you know, what's the right move for the fan? What's the right move for the business? What's the right move strategically? Literally, as we sit here today, we do not know, but we're certainly solving for something fun and interesting and big and an excuse to sneak away from the family for a few hours on Christmas.
Do the Bills fit that mold of a team? Because when you said the Christmas game last year, those were three different games, but now this is a standalone game. Are they one of the teams?
The challenge is what we have to do is if we're going to play the previous Saturday and then we're going to come back the following Wednesday, you're talking about four teams that all play each other, some sort of round robin, and they're going to play, you know, A versus B and C versus D on Saturday, and then come back on Wednesday and A versus C and B versus D. So you got to find four teams that all play each other that we think sitting here in April are going to be relevant for two national windows each, Saturday, December 21st, and then again come back on Wednesday the 25th. So you think about how do you find four teams that all play each other? Your mind instantly goes to, you know, find me a division. Find me any division that we think is going to be competitive down the stretch. So Buffalo, Miami, Jets, New England. Is the AFC East going to be up for grabs in week 16 and 17 of the NFL season? You know, I think we're going to want to see who New England ends up with as a quarterback. And then, you know, if not the AFC East, then is there another division that's super competitive that we think is going to come down to the wire? And can you find four teams that all play each other that are going to play this little round robin and have four national television windows late in the year that we're guessing in April are going to be playoff relevant, you know, 8 months from now. That's a tall task.
And then one other thing. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Do you know the time like of that game? Is there a tentative like when?
Haven't decided yet. I mean, I think, you know, what we saw last year, don't forget, we played the triple header each of the last 2 years. Of those six games, the game that generated the most viewership across both years, all six games, was the early game last year. Granted, it was a Chiefs game. It was a Chiefs-Raiders game. It was competitive. It went down to the wire. Raiders actually ended up beating them. Yeah. You know, so that's the recipe, right? Close game, you know, underdog with the lead, favorite with the ball, trying to tie it up at the end. Like, that's what keeps people tuned into their television. But, you know, what is Christmas Day, right? Do we open presents in the morning and then, heck, we're ready for football at 1 o'clock, right? You think about Thanksgiving, it's the opposite, right? The dinner's at the end of the day, so we're watching football during the day. We're still learning what Christmas is and what our fans are most interested in. But the fact that, you know, 29 million people watched at 1 o'clock in the afternoon tells you that the viewership is there. The viewership base is there. If we can get the right game and the right, you know, matchup and a compelling close game. If we're only playing two games, I don't know if we're going to do 1 and 4, but maybe you slide them more to like the 3 and 6:30 model like we do on the playoff Sundays. Maybe you do go 4 and 8. The problem with 8 is, you guys know from being in primetime so much these last couple of years, is it gets late on the East Coast and you get to 11 o'clock. And if the game is not competitive, you do start to see that viewership kind of wander off the cliff. And, you know, not too early, not too late. I don't know exactly where that's going to be right now. And again, I think part of it will depend on the broadcast partner, depending on which partner ends up with the game. They'll surely have some thoughts on the right window for them, whether it's for the domestic audience here or a global audience, you know, if it's one of the streaming partners.
Football teams, coaches, everybody, they're creatures of habit. How much have you heard from teams already saying, hey, don't put us on Christmas? It's a Wednesday. We don't want to do that.
You know what, though? Every team in the league is going to play one of these short weeks, whether you play a Sunday to a Thursday in week 6 and 7 or a Saturday to a Wednesday in week 16 and 17. It's not so much about that one week as it is about what's the rest of my schedule look like. Yeah. Some teams might end up with two short weeks. So give me one early. Give me my bye in the middle so everybody can take a break, and give me one late. And also, I'm thinking about my three time zone trips cross country. And do I want to pair some of them up and go out west and stay out west? And might that impact where I want to find my short week or my bye? Am I going international this year? So it's not so much about, oh, I don't want that one game. It's about, if I get that one game, what to do to the rest of my schedule. And that's the same way we're thinking about it. We don't want anybody on schedule release day to say, this schedule is perfect, thank you so much, which nobody ever says, or this schedule is completely unfair, we can't compete with this, what were you thinking? I hope we never get into that situation. Everybody's going to find something in their schedule they're just a little disappointed about. As long as, you know, everybody's just a little disappointed, that's probably the sweet spot for us. Nobody too happy, nobody too angry. And yeah, somebody's going to play Wednesday. But the truth is, if you're competitive and you're in the playoff chase and you're playing for something, you're going to get a chance to play in front of 25, 30 million people. That's something I think all of our players are always excited about. And so, yeah, the coach may not love it, but I think the players will. And if they're playing for something, what a fun Christmas celebration. Let's go clinch a playoff spot.
Speaking of December, before Christmas, you always have these Saturdays after college football basically ends, before the bowl games, where you take a group of games and you say TBD, right? I mean, here's the schedule, TBD. There's a group of games that they're going to be three of them, maybe two of them, move to a Saturday. All right, how do you determine that group of games when the schedule comes out? And then what's important to you as you get closer to determining which games actually are moved?
Yeah, the idea is sort of a flexible scheduling light, if you will, for the Saturday pool. You know, Sunday Night Football has flexible scheduling. Now Monday Night Football and Thursday Night Football have flexible scheduling. CBS and Fox have always had the ability to move games between 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock, and now we can move them cross between CBS and Fox. So you're always trying to find the best games for the biggest windows. We played a Saturday game. This has to be now 6-7 years ago now. I think it was Buffalo-Baltimore or something like that, or Baltimore-Indy. And it was a game that we felt really, really good about for Saturday for NFL Network. And by the time we got there to week 16 or whatever it was, the both teams were struggling and it wasn't the game we had hoped for. And we started talking about, this is the risk that you run picking games for national windows in May when the season doesn't even start till September, no less knowing who's going to be playoff relevant in December. So started to come up with this notion of, well, maybe you can't do flexible scheduling, because once you tell fans it's Saturday, then asking them to switch to Sunday is an extra challenge and vice versa. So how about this? A handful of games every week, we'll just call them TBD. So know who you're playing and know that you're playing either Saturday, Sunday, or Monday now with flexible scheduling. So just be flexible. The vast majority, the overwhelming majority of our games are still played on Sunday, obviously. But this notion of a Saturday pool, a TBD pool, throw four or five games in there. And then when you get there, which of these games have risen to the level of worthy of national attention? And what's the rest of the week look like for all your other broadcast partners? Maybe CBS needs a little extra love at 1 o'clock because the game we thought was going to be their anchor in the early window isn't quite as strong as we'd hoped. So maybe instead of deploying that game on NFL Network, you know, in the afternoon, maybe we go ahead and we save it and keep it for Sunday. Maybe you need to, you know, prop up Sunday night or Monday night. So as a schedule maker, honestly, I wish every game was TBD. None of us know anything in this league. It's sports. It's the beauty of this league. So I wish every game was TBD and we could decide, you know, that morning who's playing Saturday, who's playing Sunday. That's probably not fair to our fans. So, you know, where's that balance between getting the better games into the biggest windows, but also giving our fans a little bit of certainty? Hey, look, you know the Bills are home this weekend. You know they're playing the Patriots. You just don't know yet whether it's Saturday, Sunday, or Monday. But there's no secrets here. We tell the team throughout the year, and if they want to tweet it out to their fans or answer questions when they call, we're trying to be as transparent as we can. But it's sports, and nobody ever knows what's going to happen. And sometimes, you know, the latest possible decision is the right one. So we wait as long as we can, try to be sympathetic and acknowledge that there's an inconvenience to the fan, but also trying to make sure that we get the right games in the right window. So five games a weekend listed as TBD, and pick two or three of them to be played on Saturday.
I think that's probably a team calling to tell you that they don't want to play on either Christmas or
I heard your pod. I don't want to play.
What is the deal? I know that we already know the Lions are going to play in their normal slot on Thanksgiving on Thursday. We know that the Cowboys will play in their normal slot in the afternoon. What are you guys looking for the late slot on Thanksgiving? Because that's another area where the Bills have kind of been the last couple of years.
They have, and have performed well. I mean, I think when we talked about this way back when, I think it was Buff Detroit the first time, and then it was Buff Dallas, and then it was like a Buff New Orleans.
Yep.
And now what we're starting to see is that shift where, you know, Buffalo's not the opponent. Buffalo's the main draw. And now it's like, who's the Buffalo opponent? And so can I tell you right now it's Buffalo, Miami or whatever on Thanksgiving night? No, because again, we don't work that way. It's a short week Thursday. Somebody's going to play Sunday to Thursday, whether you do it on Thanksgiving or Saturday to Wednesday on Christmas or Sunday to Thursday, week three to week four. Somebody's going to play that short week Thursday. We don't have to make that decision now. We can leave a little flexibility, let the computer search through this infinite solution space and try to find that magical, mythical, one perfect schedule that makes everybody, if not happy, just a little disappointed. And so we don't have to commit right now. Like, I can tell you with the honest truth, we don't know who Detroit's playing yet on Thanksgiving. We don't know who Dallas is playing yet on Thanksgiving. And we don't know who's going to play Thanksgiving night. But whomever that is, that's going to be one of their short week Thursdays. Might be their only short week Thursday, or it might be one of two short weeks. And they might play, you know, an Amazon game somewhere else in the schedule. If they are playing a second short week, it probably shouldn't be like week 11. You shouldn't play short week 11, and then a full week, and then right back to a short week in week 13. So can you spread out the short weeks? Can you use the bye strategically in there? Could somebody play Thanksgiving and Christmas? Yeah, mathematically it could happen. Probably wouldn't play those both at home. I don't think that would be the right thing to do to the fans. So trying to find that balance, who's interested, who's eager, who's had it before, who hasn't had it in a while, and kind of working with your broadcast partners. That's an NBC window that Thursday night. And again, you get 30, 35 million people watching Detroit on a Thanksgiving. You get 40, 45 million people watching Dallas on Thanksgiving. That's an awful lot of people that have already watched two NFL games that day. You got to eat at some point. Like, what's that Thursday night game that makes you want to watch hours 7, 8, and 9 of NFL football that day? It's got to be something, you know, Howard Katz always says, it's got to sound like a football game. So that's generally what we're looking for. We've got a pool, we've got a list, and Hopefully the one we land on is the one not just right for Thanksgiving night, but right for the whole schedule.
This is a question from Mike Shope, our WGR Sports Radio 550 afternoon drive host. He's a schedule nerd like I am. And he said, please ask Mike, what is most important week 18 to you, or what's not important to find that last game, that final primetime game? Is it winning in? Is it for a division? We've seen different scenarios play out over the last few years and how you've chosen it.
Yeah, what's most important for me, selfishly, is flexibility. I want to make sure going into week 18, if we can, that literally all 16 games are free agents. We don't owe anybody anything. We've paid all our dues, paid all our debts. We've met all our, you know, contractual minimums to all of our broadcast partners. We've done right by all our teams. So that when we get to week 18, literally every single game could be used in any single window, because you want to be strategic about those two Saturday games, right? You want games that have playoff implications, but don't suddenly render a bunch of other games meaningless. You don't want the clinch games on Saturday, because now everybody who was scoreboard watching realized, oh man, I'm out of it now. Like, you want it the other way. You want the guy playing just to stay alive. So find that, you know, 8, 9, 10 seed that needs to win and then get help. That sounds like a Saturday game, or somebody in the chase position for a division. Hey, I got to win, and then I got to root for that guy I'm chasing to lose. So I got everything to play for, and then he's got everything to play for tomorrow. Like, you're looking for the Saturday games, kind of like the appetizer, kind of like the amuse-bouche, like a little something to whet everybody's appetite. These guys are still playing for something, but they haven't rendered anybody else meaningless. Then you get to Sunday, and if you can, you want to cascade the whole day, one into the other. The games that are dependent on each other, put them right next to each other. The teams that have to win and then wait for help, play them early, so that by the time we get to that late guy, you know, everybody's watching. And then to your question, game 272, it's got to be something that's bulletproof. It's got to be something that can't be rendered meaningless by the results earlier in the day or earlier in the weekend. So, yeah, that winning in, slam dunk, no matter what, we know that team, or hopefully those two teams, are playing for everything that night. And if we're lucky, you got both teams playing for something. That Buff-Miami game last year, perfect example. Yes. Everybody playing for something. You know, the year before, it was Detroit-Green Bay, and it was Green Bay playing for everything. And Detroit, by the time they hit the field, knew they were eliminated, but you just knew Coach Campbell wasn't going to lay down. You just knew they were going to play hard. And the fact that they went into Lambeau and won that game and knocked Aaron Rodgers out of the playoffs and knocked him out of Green Bay, really, you know, shows you that's the beauty, that's the benefit of those division games in Week 18. Nobody lays down. Nobody takes the day off. Everybody plays hard. And if you can't make the playoffs, the next best thing to salvage your season is to knock your division opponent out of the playoffs. So loving all those division games. In a perfect world, everybody, you know, eligible for every window, total free agency that whole weekend, all 16 games deployed in any window on any network. And then, you know, got to get a little lucky, got to have a lot of teams still in playoff contention, a lot of playoff implications still to be decided, and then try to sequence them in the right way. So to your point earlier, there's always a story. There's a story in every window. There's something every window that fans are going to care about.
Last year, you told us the Holy Trinity was the Bills, the Bengals, and the Chiefs. I believe those are the three teams that you said.
Did I say Holy Trinity? Did I use that terminology?
You did. I think you might have. Yeah, I don't know.
You might have to slip Baltimore in there now.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I was going to say I don't need the Trinity, but who are the teams that are kind of in that tier that not only their fans want to watch, but everybody wants to watch?
Yeah, that's when you know you've broken through, when a game becomes must-see TV and, you know, you play whatever it is, Kansas City, San Francisco, like, we've got a playoff, a Super Bowl rematch again next year. Like, that game's going to be one that everybody's going to watch. But, you know, any Kansas City game, any San Francisco game, any Buffalo game, any Baltimore game, you know, Dallas is still the ratings kingpin for the most part. Philadelphia is relevant. I think what we're going to see a lot next year, hopefully, is some of these teams drafting quarterbacks, and these kids are going to play right now. You know, when we were younger, the quarterbacks were drafted and they sat for a while. Now it seems like these kids are playing right away, and teams are trying to capitalize on that rookie contract. And so they're throwing these guys right out on the field, and we've all watched them play on Saturdays for 2 or 3 years. We know how good athletes they are. It's always fascinating to see which of these guys make that jump and can be relevant right away in the NFL, and they become must-see TV. And so if we can get a little lucky and you put one of those, you know, Chicago, Washington, New England, whoever those guys are who are going to draft one of these quarterbacks early, you know, are they going to be matched up with a Buffalo, a San Francisco, a Dallas? And then you kind of catch lightning in a bottle, and it's like, holy cow, this team's playing great. This rookie can play. And oh man, look at this. In week six, they happen to catch the Chiefs or they happen to catch the Bills and it's on national television. Hopefully we market it, we promote it, we remind everybody, we help them find it. They sit down, they tune in, and then the game is good. That's how you generate those kind of viewership numbers that we've been seeing these last few years to really kind of jump off the page. So the Holy Trinity is probably beyond just a threesome now, yeah. But there's an awful lot of good teams, an awful lot of good quarterbacks, and I think there's a few more coming, which is really exciting, you know, not just as a schedule maker, but as a fan. I think there's a lot of really good storylines in the league right now, one of which is Aaron Rodgers, right? This time last year, we were all in on the Jets. Everybody was. And, you know, he made it four plays, and that schedule suffered as a result. Now he seems like he's healthy. He seems like he's relevant. The Jets seem to have gotten better. So are we all in again on the Jets? You know, every time Aaron Rodgers plays Josh Allen, like that feels like must-see TV now. It was last year. I think it is again. So the more of these teams that have, you know, quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, superstars that everybody wants to watch, how often can we pair them up with each other and how often can we get those in the big national windows, whether it's on Christmas or Thanksgiving or a Sunday night or a Monday night? That's sort of the gig.
We usually talk about Taylor Swift in the NFL with Travis Kelce,
but
is her tour going to mess anything up this year? Do you have to consider
she's
that?
She's still touring. Look, we get it, right? These buildings that are built for, you know, NFL football teams, we use them 10 times a year.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully 12 or 13 if we make a January playoff run, but we only use them a few times a year. There's got to be room for other events going on in these stadiums, and certainly Ms. Swift has proven herself to be must-see TV and must-see in person in concert. We will certainly do all we can to accommodate, whether it's Miami or New Orleans or wherever it is that she's got on the rest of her tour. But it's not just her, right? It's the whole touring industry. Yeah. They all kind of had to hit pause during COVID, and it took really a year or two for them to get back. And, you know, so now you're starting to see some of those big names out there touring again. And again, to the extent where we can accommodate, we certainly will try. We can't do everything for everybody. Obviously, we got to try to make the right schedule for the league. And, you know, hopefully if the one window that you wanted for Pink or Ed Sheeran or whoever it was didn't happen to materialize, you know, at least we didn't, you know, take all the available dates, and there's a way to reroute the tour. We talk constantly with our friends at Live Nation. You know, Taylor Swift fans are NFL fans too. So we want to make sure that they can see Taylor and still watch football, and we can still build a schedule that's fair to everybody.
Matt's got tickets.
Yeah, so if you let me know, because I sat at the sideline of training camp Bills practice with my laptop tethered to my phone for wireless internet in a waiting room to get Taylor Swift tickets for a Toronto show. So I'm just hoping the Bills are home that weekend so that I could do both. And then I don't have to tell my wife, like, hey, remember those tickets? You're going to have to find somebody else to go with. How much does revenge play a factor into the NFL schedule? Because perhaps you've heard the Bills have this receiver that they traded to another really good team in the AFC. And a lot of people are wondering when we're going to watch that game.
And if I can, Mike, if I can ask, like, did it matter when that happened to you, right? Like, did the Bills Texans game become a little different in the eyes of the schedule makers on April 3rd when Stephon Diggs was traded there?
Did it become a little different? Yes. Did it become a lot different? I would say no, because that Buffalo Houston game was going to be one of our better games of the year, right? Those are two playoff teams, and that Houston team is on the ascendancy, man. They were a lot of fun last year. And don't forget, the schedule makers whiffed entirely on the Texans last year. We had them literally in zero national television windows. So we tried to use flexible scheduling and tried to find a good home for them. We were thinking about a Monday night game in New York at one point. I think we ended up moving a 1 o'clock game to a 4 o'clock game, or maybe vice versa, to try to get it a bigger footprint. Like, we whiffed on the Texans last year at this time. I'm always wary of who we're going to whiff on again. But as the Texans became a story down the stretch, then you did try to find more windows for them. We ended up putting them in that Saturday week 18 window against Indy, which, again, that perfect sort of, hey, you both have everything to play for on Saturday. Then you have to watch on Sunday and see how Jacksonville does. And that was the perfect set of circumstances. And I don't remember the exact number, but I think 19 or 20 million people watched that Texans-Colts game on Saturday night. And then when they made the playoffs, this wasn't the first time you'd seen the Texans. You just watched them last week. You know the story. most everybody had put CJ on their fantasy team. Like, we've been watching the Texans for a few months at that point. The Texans have earned this. They have ascended into that. Are they in the Buffalo, Kansas City, Baltimore? Maybe not just yet, but man, they are knocking on the door. So a Buffalo, Houston, a Kansas City, Houston, a Dallas, Houston, a Baltimore, Houston. They've got a fantastic schedule this year. On us to make sure we put those games in the right windows. Did the Buffalo Houston game become a little more interesting? It did, no doubt. But still, how you use that one asset isn't necessarily what we're solving for. We're solving for all 272. So could that game be, you know, a really strong 1 o'clock anchor for CBS some Sunday afternoon? It might end up going to 65% of the country. Like, that's a real good use of that asset. If it's on a Monday night, then you can get the whole ESPN hype machine talking all day long, starting with Stephen A in the morning and all through the day. And you know they'll be talking about it all day long. That's how you build interest. That's how you build awareness. That's what'll get everybody in front of their televisions. You want to maximize the viewership for that game, like we talked about before. Put it on Sunday night. Put it on Sunday afternoon on CBS at 4:25. Could you use that to really send a signal to our fans and to our partner at Amazon? And put a Buffalo Baltimore game there, or a Buffalo Houston, or something big and sexy for a Thursday night game. And now, like we said, you want to get people in front of the television, want them to find Amazon Prime. They probably have it. They buy paper towels. You just got to know to go there for the football. Well, put a Buffalo Houston game there and let everybody talk about it all day long. That's the way you get people interested. That's the way you get people in front of the television. Did it go from a C plus to an A plus? No, but it went from, you know, an A minus to a solid A. I'm sure we will use that game strategically.
All right. So Matt and I, we do a lot of, you know, out of town radio interviews and television interviews about the Bills. And the number one thing so far the last few weeks has been, boys, the window closing because they traded Stephon Diggs and they, you know, released some older players. And our answer usually is, dude, they have Josh Allen. The window's not closing. They still have Josh Allen. And then you look and the odds are still one of the top five teams to win the Super Bowl, still the team to win the division. How about in the schedule makers' eyes? How do they see the Bills after some transition here this offseason as it relates to them being one of the teams that have had the maximum primetime games over the last several years?
Yeah, not taking our foot off the gas with the Bills. I don't think there's any question they have, you know, one of the best players in the league, and that is the must-see TV that we've been talking about here. What makes me want to go sit in front of the television for a few hours? It's somebody like that, and he's phenomenal. He's fun to watch, and I assume the coaching staff will put the right pieces around him, probably starting next week in the draft, trying to fill a couple of holes and then seeing if these kids can play at this level and how quickly they can integrate themselves into the offense. And, you know, what other pieces are they going to pick up in free agency? It's not over yet, right? None of these rosters are set. I don't think there's any hesitancy on the part of the National Football League to deploy Buffalo Bills games in big national windows, expecting 20, 25, 30 million people to tune in and watch. That's what you get when you've got one of the best players and the best athletes and the most marketable stars in the game. Again, great schedule.
He's on the cover of Madden. I mean, come on, right?
Look, great schedule, right? Yeah. Play so many good games. So he's played tough games, tough schedule this year for Buffalo.
Yeah, that's right.
So we won't hesitate at all. There's just some games that just sound too big to be played at 1 o'clock in the afternoon with 7, 8, 9 other games going on. So there's a lot of Bills games on that list.
Mike, one of the things that I was really interested in was, and this is probably a question that maybe just appeals to me a little bit more because I work at an ABC affiliate, and all of a sudden last year, the ABC station started getting a lot of the Monday Night Football games. Is that what the plan is moving forward? Because I know there are people obviously in the country who don't necessarily have ESPN, but they have over the antenna ABC. Is this just the norm now?
It's not the norm. Let's go back. When we signed the new deals with Disney, ABC said we'd like more NFL games on our broadcast. Don't forget, they were the Monday night. When we were growing up, they were Monday night football, right?
Right.
The games
didn't
kick off till like 9 o'clock Eastern time.
I do remember.
Watch them under the covers. Hope your mom didn't hear.
I had to have my dad let me stay up till halftime highlights of Howard Cosell.
Exactly.
Go to bed.
Which,
right?
which is crazy to people now. Crazy to my kids. That's how you got your highlights. That was it. There was no SportsCenter. There wasn't, you know, NFL coverage on the local news. There was no video on demand. There was no internet. Like, if you didn't see Howard Cass's highlights, you didn't see the highlights.
That's right.
It's fascinating. And I'm sure you've heard or seen the way he just used to do them off the top. He just used to freestyle. Like, how much time do I have? 3:15, Howard, go. And he would just do it off the top. phenomenal. Anyway, that's whole right. whole nother podcast. The ABC got back into the NFL family in the last round of television deals. They picked up some simulcasts where they were going to take a few ESPN Monday Night Football games and simulcast them on both the cable and the broadcast outlet each week. They picked up a few of their own games. We've been doing these side by sides, one ESPN, one ABC. You guys were actually in the first one a couple of years ago, Tennessee, Buffalo opposite, whatever the
Philadelphia, Minnesota.
So ABC has getting back into the NFL family. Is this the norm? It's not, because what happened last year was not the norm. What happened last year was you had the writer's strike and the director's strike, and so there was no original primetime programming. And so ABC actually came to the league and said, listen, we don't have, you know, scripted programming. There is no scripted programming. We've got some reality TV. But hey, would you be interested in allowing us to simulcast more of the Monday night games? So what ended up happening last year was every Monday night game, ESPN, ABC simulcast, except for the two side-by-sides or three, whatever many we did last year. This year, you know, no writer's strike. We're expecting original fall television series. I'm sure ABC wants whatever it is, The Bachelor, Dancing with the Stars, whatever they've got. I'm sure they're going to want, you know, to have something on the big television network. But I'm not sure those shows are going to generate the viewership that an NFL game, especially a good NFL game, is going to generate. So it's a business decision for the ABC television network and the Disney corporate family. How many of those simulcasts is the right number? Last year, it was all of them. The year before, I think it was three. I suspect we'll settle somewhere in the middle. But, you know, you work for the ABC affiliate, so you surely know this. When the Bills are on Monday Night Football, when they're on ESPN and they're on over the air in Buffalo on ABC, even though we all know ESPN has Monday Night Football and we are all conditioned to go to ESPN for Monday Night Football, when they're on the over the air affiliate, we all just end up gradually, you know, gravitating there. And it's something like 70-30, 60-40. Even though ABC hadn't had NFL football in 10 years, all of a sudden they started simulcasting Monday night, and more than half the audience was getting Monday Night Football from the broadcast outlet from ABC. It's just force of habit. We all pick up our television remote and we go, you know, 2, 4, 5, 7, and that's what we watch. And then you have to go hunting for something. If it's on those broadcast networks, you get more viewers, especially in, you know, that non-avid fan. We're going to find the games no matter where they're deployed. But the non-avid fan, the casual fan, might just pick up the remote and start clicking and be like, oh, football. Oh, I didn't know that was on. Or I forgot that was on. If that's true, we didn't do a good job promoting it and marketing it. But now that you found it, why don't you stay and watch a little bit?
Yeah. Last year, you told us you would do a little experimentation of when those Monday night games would air. Some maybe a little bit of a staggered start time, and then you'd have a same start time. How did that work out? And can you tell us now what the plan might be this year for those dual Monday night games?
Still working on it. Still working on it with ESPN. I think a big part of it's going to be which games actually land in those windows. You know, I've heard from enough people that I've heard both sides of the fence for every option we've had. I don't like the overlap. The overlap's too big. The overlap's too small. I like that I don't have to watch halftime. I can switch to the other game. But I hate that you're giving me live look-ins and highlights. I was taping the other game. I don't want to know. I want to watch it later. Why can't we go back to 7 o'clock and 10 o'clock and let me watch both games? We've heard it from everybody. I don't think we know definitively what the right way to deploy these assets are, but we're going to continue to work with ABC, ESPN, try to figure it out, probably experiment still a little bit more. Maybe even move ESPN Plus into one of those windows, take them off of that 9:30 a.m. London game. There's all kinds of things that, you know, when we have the flexibility, kind of try some things that maybe we haven't done before and just see what sticks, see what the fans think, see what the numbers say. Got to get a little lucky, obviously. If the games are good and compelling and close, then fans will stay and watch. That's the beauty of having two Monday night games, I guess. If one of them's not as good, but the other one is, well, I was here for the A game, but I'll watch the B game because at least it's close. You know, if not deployed as the second Monday night game, you know, that other game would have just gone back to Sunday afternoon as one of 7 or 8 or 9 games. You probably weren't going to get to watch it anyway. Here, at least it's on a broadcast channel, whether it's ESPN or ABC. And if it's good, if it's compelling, if you're a fan, if you've got that quarterback on your fantasy team, if you placed a bet on it, you can watch it now. Whereas you weren't going to be able to if it was one of 8 games at 1 o'clock on Sunday.
when you were talking about building the schedule in its like initial phase of doing it by hand or on a board and kind of starting on the outside and then working your way to the middle, when you do it now, and I know that there's computers that are doing a lot of it, what are you looking? Are you trying to still do it that way of, hey, we want these games in the beginning, we want these games in the end because we think that those are the most premier and attractive games? Or do you need to spread it out because every week is so important?
Yeah, look, you can't put all the games in September and you can't save all the games for December. You got to be strategic about deploying them across all 18 weeks. And like we said, there's storylines to be told throughout the season. Some of those storylines might be better early in the season. Some of them you could save for a little bit later. An example, how about Kirk Cousins? How about Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta and Atlanta goes back to Minnesota this year? You put that game early in the season, you know those two teams are still relevant. You know that there's a Kirk Cousins return storyline to that game. You save that game for December. Now you're less about Kirk Cousins returns, and now you're about, where, how are Minnesota and Atlanta doing this year, and what are the playoff implications of this job and of this game? And maybe you've missed an opportunity to tell that story. I think a lot. I've thought a lot about this year, about the Harbaugh Bowl, about Ravens Chargers. They played each other in a Super Bowl. Like, how are we going to get any bigger than that? But it means something. Like, to me, that feels like maybe an early in the season game. Like, while everybody's still playoff relevant, I have no idea how good either of those two teams are. I think Baltimore is going to be there down the stretch, like we've been talking about, as long as Lamar stays healthy. And, you know, you talk about the Chargers, you know they got one piece, man. You know they got one piece of the puzzle, and that's the quarterback. And they're going to be fun to watch no matter when you play it. But if you're going to, you know, if you're celebrating or marketing or promoting the coaches, that's probably an early season game. If you're promoting the playoff implications of two good teams fighting for a playoff spot, that feels more like a late season game. So, you know, some of them feel smarter deployed earlier, and others you feel like, hey, you know what? This only gets more interesting if we hold on to it and we save it for later. KC San Fran, Super Bowl rematch is a good idea. You play it in week 4, it's a Super Bowl rematch. You play it in week 16, might be a Super Bowl preview. You know, how do you get maximum value out of each of these assets? Where do the fans most want to see these games being played? Again, nobody's ever always happy with everything we do, but hopefully you get a little lucky sometimes and, you know, schedule makers look smart.
I remember a couple of years ago, you even said when New England was playing Kansas, I'm sorry, was Brady, Buccaneers going back to New England. Yeah. And you said that was more of an early season game because, hey, you have an older quarterback. You just don't know what's going to happen. You can't leave it the chance that you put it at week 10 and suddenly he's not playing anymore.
Yeah, and you bring weather into play if you go too late in the season in an outdoor stadium and like, hey, let's celebrate Tom Brady in 6 inches of snow. It's like, is that the right vibe for that story? And again, his return to New England, the story was his return to New England. Honestly, I don't think any of us thought he was going to take the Buccaneers to the Super Bowl. Right. And they were what? They were like 6-6.
Yeah.
Right? And then they had just gotten beat maybe by Cincinnati or something. They had like a week 14 bye. And everybody's like, oh, I'm not sure this is working out so great. They didn't lose again, right? They won their last 4 in the regular and won all 4 in the postseason. And the GOAT got another ring. Nobody knows anything. It's the beauty of this sport, of sports. Yeah. Nobody knows anything. You shoot your best shot in April. The season doesn't even start for 5 more months, man. I wish we could play these games today. But I hope the ones that we chose for early in the season are, you know, the big storylines where we wanted them. And then the ones we saved for later, are the ones that we guessed right and had playoff implications and had big star quarterbacks playing well, being healthy and fighting for playoff spots. That's the recipe for December.
I'm so glad you brought up weather, Mike, because I want to go back a year ago. Can you bring us a little bit inside into the week that led up to that AFC wildcard game here in Buffalo with Pittsburgh and the weather and moving it and what role your department may have played and how you had to balance that? And the second part, would that be going forward, how much you have to think about things like that in a place like Buffalo?
Yeah. I mean, look, the truth is we didn't even schedule that game for the nighttime window, right? It was for, it Sunday at 1?
Sunday 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Sunday right? 1 o'clock.
So to the extent that you're going to play a game in Buffalo in January, I felt like we did the smartest thing we could weather-wise.
Nothing you could do.
Play it early. Nothing you could do. Mother Nature decides, and when she decides, you know, that decision wasn't really made at a, you know, broadcast middle manager guy level. That decision was made at the commissioner and the governor of New York level. Yeah. They decided, and they were probably 100% right, that, you know, the city needed to concentrate. There was just too much else going on to ask 60,000 people to get in their cars and to go drive through that. You know, then again, I realized it wasn't that much better on Monday, was it, than it was on Sunday. You had to play that game at some point, right? I don't know that we could have gone to Tuesday or Wednesday. So it is, you know, part of this sport. We play outdoors. We play in the elements. Some of the most famous games in the YouTube videos that we all watch are always, you know, the weather games and the snow games. I would say we root for snow. I would say not that much. Like that was more than we needed. So what role did we play? A lot of, you know, communication with the teams, a lot of working with Pittsburgh and Buffalo. You know, when can you get there? Can it be safe? Talking with the governor, can we clear the roads? Should we be diverting resources from the people that need it to get the Pittsburgh Steelers bus, you know, into the parking lot? Is it safe for the fans to be in the parking lot? Do we want that many people, you know, outside and in that weather for 6, 8, 10, 12 hours? There was an awful lot of conversation, but the answer to your question is, if they tell us we can't or shouldn't play, we won't. But if we can, we will. You know, we play games outdoors in the cold, and you get to places like Buffalo in January, you got to expect a little weather, and it made for some pretty good TV, and I'm glad everybody was safe, and I'm glad we got to play it. And then there became that question of, well, how much later in the week would you play it, and could you still keep some integrity to the following round of the playoffs? Because, you know, at some point, you got to get to a Super Bowl, and you got to make sure that, you know, those step sequence, you're trying to be fair to everybody, you know, the competitive challenges. It was interesting, but not unprecedented, and probably not the last time we're going to go through something like that. But when the governor and the commissioner are talking, they don't care what the broadcasting guy says. They're going to do what's right for the community.
What do you look for to start the season? I know last year we talked about this a little bit, because you don't want to necessarily throw your fastball because everybody's going to be watching anyway, but you also need it to be compelling. And last year worked out perfectly with that Lions game. But when you find the Chiefs opponents this year, what do you look for that you think feels like the right way to start the season?
Yeah, look, we've been talking about this, you know, for an hour here. There's so many compelling storylines this season in the league, and it feels like most of them are playing Kansas City this year. We talked about Houston, right? Up and coming, almost like kind of like run it back like we did with Detroit last year, that team that had just played their way onto the cusp of real national attention. Well, no better way to grab everybody's attention than to, you know, be there at kickoff and go in and knock off the champs. I think it set Detroit off on their journey to division title. You know, Coach Campbell said something like, oh, they think we won't get our ass kicked or something. Like, we don't think anybody's going to get beat by 40, but did anybody think Detroit was going to go in there and get a W and go off and like run away with that division? Like, that set the tone for their whole season. Could that be something for a Houston this year? Could it be the first game for Harbaugh in LA for the Chargers? Like, never more interesting than week one. And, you know, Herbert missed this down the stretch, so he's coming back off an injury. You know, wouldn't that be fun and interesting? Joe Burrow's coming back off an injury. Wouldn't Cincinnati going into Kansas City be a heck of a first game? Maybe we don't take a flyer on an up-and-coming team and we go with an old standby and you bring Baltimore, like we were just talking about. And how about Baltimore, Kansas City for kickoff? That'll get everybody to their televisions. And we can use that as a platform to kick off and promote the whole weekend, including the Peacock game the next day. So you could do the Raiders. You could do the Broncos. Don't know who the Broncos quarterback maybe might be. And it might be one of these kids that gets drafted, or maybe they make a move. Heck, maybe it's Zach Wilson if the Jets end up trading him there. There's so many good storylines in week one, and everybody's undefeated and hope springs eternal. I don't think you can make a bad choice. You know, I might even look at, you know, they rotate into the NFC South. I think they host Tampa Bay and New Orleans. Like, I could make a case for Tampa Bay, and, you know, right there, they made the playoffs last year, won a playoff game. Like, that team has played their way into more national television. They kept Baker Mayfield. They kept Mike Evans. Like, Tampa Bay would work for kickoff. Like, there's so many good choices. Honestly, the three of us and eight friends playing Kansas City probably works for kickoff. So I don't think you can make a bad choice. It's less about what's right for kickoff than it is about what's right for the rest of the week one schedule, what's right for the rest of the NBC schedule, what's right for the rest of the whole schedule, and be open-minded about going down any one of these paths for kickoff and see where that takes you for the other 271.
We know it won't be the Bills this year. They're not on Kansas City schedule in Problem Kansas solved. City. That's right.
You'll see Taylor Swift on that Thursday. You're safe.
There you go. And Mike, I know you've been so gracious with your time. Just I have one more that comes at me a lot from a lot of viewers and a lot of listeners on the radio. They knew when they know I'm going to talk with you. And that is the Bills have opened 2 years in a row on prime time at night, right? Three years in a row, right, Mike? Where they got the kickoff. What was it, Mike, Matt?
No, it was that. Well, last year.
Oh, yeah. I think it's 2 years in a row. So they're asking, would you really give them 3 years in a row on the road? And would it be 3 years in a row on the road in primetime? And my answer is, look, I did some research. The Cincinnati Bengals opened 7 straight years on the road. I don't know if the league actually cares about that, if they think about that, if they don't. So do you think about that the Bills have opened on the road 2 straight years and both in primetime?
I wouldn't say 2 in a row is, sound the alarm bells. Oh, my God, right. We own a home game. 7's a lot. Little different for, like, the Cincinnati's and the Pittsburghs and the Phillies because they're working around a baseball team, and sometimes our hand gets forced just in terms of which weekends are available. But, yeah, look, I feel like as the scheduling team, we should pay what we owe. If you've been X many years in a row on the road week one, you deserve a week one home opener. If you've been X many years in the road on the road for week 18, you should probably close with a home game. Maybe your short week Thursday has been a lot of years on the road in a row. You know, it all depends on who you talk to. Also, is it where you play or who you play? Like, you want to break up a 3-game road trip? Okay, we can get you a home game, but that home game might be against Kansas City. Like, is that better than a short road trip to a team that didn't make the playoffs last year that you might be favored by 8 or 10 points over? Like, I don't want to get too caught up in, you know, the patterns, but when we get to a point where, hey, that's an outlier, we should probably pay that off. We would surely do that. I can't tell you definitively that we're looking at the Bills this year and saying absolutely positively have to be home or absolutely positively can't be on primetime. This goes to our conversation earlier. You want the first week of the season to be exciting for everybody in every national window. Well, one way to do that is to put Josh Allen in that window. So absolutely in the mix for Sunday night, Monday night. You know, there's only 2 of them, and I think we got a lot of other decent storylines, so I wouldn't say it's a lock that they're going to end up in prime, but I wouldn't put it past us.
Last one for me. What are you most excited about this season? Because you get to care about every single game and you have to care about every single game. What are you most excited about as just a football fan?
It's a great question. I would say I am curious/excited about the Aaron Rodgers experience. I think a year ago at this point, not just we, the schedule makers, but like it seemed like all the NFL was fascinated by and really into Aaron Rodgers moving to the Jets. And you could see when the schedule came out, the schedule makers were very into Aaron Rodgers going to the Jets. After the year that they had, after the injury, and, you know, to a certain extent, maybe, you know, some of the off the field stuff, like, he's still interesting. I don't know. Do we lean in quite as hard? And if we don't, did we miss it? Like, what if we only put them in 2 or 3 primetime games? And then he's Aaron Rodgers that we've known for the last 10 years, and the Jets are competitive and they're playing good games, and he's an MVP candidate again, and we didn't put enough of their games in prime time. Same token, like we talk about a Houston. Are we all in on Houston now? And if we are, is there such a thing as too much? Like, do you have to do it for a couple of years in a row before we should really use you in 6, 7, 8 national windows, including things like we're talking about here, whether it's kickoff or Thanksgiving or Christmas? Like, Houston was a great story last year. Do they, you got to validate it, right? You got to follow it up. And I think maybe even more interesting to me, which is crazy because I know you guys went through it. You know, if you were a Bills fan, if you were a Bills player, if you were a Bills coach during the Tom Brady era, you were just born at the wrong time. Like, what? Just talk about bad luck, right? You know. And you think about the AFC West, and you think about Harbaugh coming in, and Antonio Pierce coming in, and Sean Payton is a good coach. And you know, those three teams are probably going to be better, but aren't they still in a division with Patrick Mahomes? And you know, were they just born at the wrong time? Like, nothing lasts forever. We all know that, but you know, those are some of the things that I'm looking at this year. More morbid curiosity than anything else, because we're probably going to lean into all those storylines and just kind of cross our fingers and hope that by the time those games are ready for national television, they're still as big and as sexy and as exciting as we hope they were when we put them on the schedule in May.
I wanted to ask you what the number one complaint you get from teams is every year generally, but when I thought about it, I wondered ourselves, Matt and I, you know, we went to London last year. The Bills were the home team as the Jags were there back to back. And I know there was a lot of talk about that, Mike. Is that something you'll revisit because of the way that worked out?
I think we'll probably run it back again. I think the Jaguars are interested and eager. Maybe not this year because the AFC only has the 8 home games, but I think one of these years where the AFC has the 9 home games, I would not be surprised if the Jaguars took 2 of their home games and deployed them and used them over there in London. I think the Jaguars had a very good experience being the visiting team and the home team and staying for that week. I know they would be interested in doing so again. Was it competitively unfair? I mean, maybe that goes to the broader question of this whole notion of rest discrepancy, rest disparity. Right. Is there such a thing in this league? If you're coming off your bye and we're playing each other, you're rested, but are you rusty?
Right.
Like, literally, you had to leave the facility for 4 days, and now you come back and you're trying to ramp it back up again, and I'm in a routine, and I'm playing, and we just beat the Packers last week, and we're playing great, and we're catching you, you know, re-energizing. But if you played the previous Thursday and I played Monday and I was on the road on Monday and you were home on Thursday, now you got a 4-day gap with a travel day in there. Like, at what point does the rest disparity actually become a competitive inequity? And, you know, is it moving the expected points scored? Is it moving the, you know, expected win percentage? Is it moving the Vegas line? Like, those guys kind of catch on to trends before any of us do. And so we've got a whole team watching things like that, and not just watching for like the competitive integrity, but also helping the scheduling team really understand, you know, what is truly unfair or less fair. It would be great if everybody played each other, you know, home away, home away, home away on equal rest every week. That doesn't happen. So where's the line we shouldn't cross? And, you know, Buffalo traveling, whatever it is, 6 time zones to London to play a team that's rested and has been there all week. Was that fair? Was that unfair? The Bills win the game. They don't say anything about it. The Bills lose the game. They wonder, hey, did the rest have something to do with it? Does that change the way the Bills travel internationally next time they travel? Do they go a little earlier and acclimate better? Somebody did it last year. Baltimore? I think Baltimore did. I think Baltimore went over like Monday. So, look, we're a copycat league. Every time somebody does something and it seems to work, you know, outside of drafting a Josh Allen or a Patrick Mahomes, like anything we can do to find an edge, you know, teams will do. And if it works for somebody, other teams will start copying. And then the scheduling team should take note of all of that and really make sure that, you know, while trying to solve all the pieces to the puzzle, we're not losing sight of the most important thing. And that's really that, you know, at kickoff, everybody's on equal footing and every game is as fair as can be, and let the players decide.
You guys are running back Black Friday this year, right? That was a success?
It was. Yeah. I mean, look, Aaron Rodgers, you know, only playing 4 plays gave us, I don't even remember who was it, Tim Boyle playing on Black Friday. That wasn't quite the way we drew it up.
Sure.
But the interesting thing about Black Friday was, even for a Tim Boyle game against the Dolphins, and it was close, but it wasn't really competitive, right? And then you had the Hail Mary pick 6 or whatever at the end, and it wasn't really close in the second half. But the interesting thing about that game is that viewership grew throughout the second half. So even in a game that wasn't necessarily competitive, people tuned in, didn't tune out. More people came to the television in the second half. So is that a function of the start time of the game? Didn't realize it was at 3:00, didn't realize it was on Amazon. You know, did we not do a good enough job promoting it and marketing it and making sure people knew it was there? Then again, if they had tuned in at the beginning and they saw it was Tim Boyle, would they have stayed that long? I don't know, but I think we're trying to create something brand new, really out of thin air. I know there's college football games on there and we're sensitive to that and trying to make sure that we're working with the college conferences and, hey, here's our window and here's the kind of game we're thinking about. If CBS, you want to move the Big Ten to noon, and hey, NBC, you want to move your game to prime. Like, we're trying to all work together. We're one big happy football family. But I think that 3:00 window for the NFL on Black Friday is going to be something that I think we've proven we can continue to build. 10 million viewers was nothing to sneeze at. And imagine if we can push that number to 12 or 15 or 16, and with the right game and the right marketing and the right competitiveness and the right score and the right quarterbacks, I think we can do that.
One more quick one, and I don't know if you can answer this. Did you have a favorite game last year?
It's a great question.
I almost feel like you're an artist and you're looking at the painting and you watch what? The game and you just go,
these are my children. I love them all equally. Did I have a favorite game last year? I'm trying to think about where I was and which games I went to and what were really exciting. I probably went to about 20 games last year. That's a great question. Oh, yeah, I got it. Philadelphia, Seattle on Monday night.
It's a great game. I remember that. That was a fantastic game.
And it was a flexible scheduling change for the NFL. It was the first time we moved a game from a Sunday to a Monday and a Monday back to a Sunday. And 5 years ago, I think the NFL would have said, impossible. We'll never do that. But think about all the way all the pieces lined up. You had a Kansas City, New England game for Monday, and New England wasn't having the season they wanted. And they were more than happy to move from a Monday night back to Sunday afternoon. Kansas City was happy. New England was happy. Great. Philly and Seattle were in a window at 4 o'clock on Sunday, I think with you guys, right? Dallas, Buffalo. I think they were in your window, and instead of having to split the country between Dallas, Buffalo, and Philly, Seattle, we were able to take the Philly, Seattle game out. Now, 100% of the country got to see Dallas, Buffalo. I don't remember. I don't think it was close, right? It wasn't a close
game. No, the Bills blew them out.
Yeah. Blew them out. But even that was kind of compelling, right? A lot of people like to watch the Cowboys, and some people like to hate watch the Cowboys, but that's okay. So 25 whatever million people got to watch that game, and then you move the Philly-Seattle game to Monday night. Seattle's at home. Yes, they have a short week the following week, but they were home to home. And Philly had the short week coming back from a three-time zone trip, but they were playing the following Monday. They were playing Christmas, so they still had the full week. So I went out there, and I wanted to talk to the Eagles. I wanted to talk to the Seahawks. I wanted to talk to the fans. You know, how was the change? How was it? And then you get to the game, and it was freaking Drew Lock, right?
Drew Lock, he balled out. He scored a touchdown right at the end. The game winning drive.
At the end that really kind of cost the Eagles the division.
That's right.
And you never know. Right? You never know. Drew Lock leads a drive, and I think maybe a week or two later, Kyler Murray led a drive against the Eagles. And then, you know, Chicken Cutlet Danny at the Giants went and got a dub over the Eagles, and and they were reeling. Was it because of the flex move to Monday night? Man, I hope not. But that game in that atmosphere, taking it out of, you know, the quote B game from 4 o'clock Eastern time on a Sunday, making it the A game on Monday, the building was electric. It was like kind of misty, kind of rainy, kind of gray, kind of Seattle weather. And then Drew freaking Locke.
Yeah.
He's a game winning touchdown drive. And it was a really fun thing to be a part of. And as a schedule maker, having made a move like that and putting a game that you hoped would be competitive into primetime, and it was, and it came down to the wire like that, and the home team chasing and getting the win and the building being electric was why we do this. It's why we go to games. We're very, very lucky. We work in the candy store, man. Oh, we are very lucky.
What a job we all have. Mike, I'm a former high school football coach, evidenced by the Wing T books behind me. People say, wait a minute, Friday night, you got the game in Brazil, you got Friday, Black Friday. There's an old law, as I'm sure you're aware of, it's the sports broadcasting law, which says the NFL can't play on Friday nights while high school's in session. How much do you have to kind of think about that, and can you assure people that the NFL won't be playing on Friday nights anytime
soon? Can't play on Friday nights beginning with the second Saturday in September.
Okay.
So because of the weird way the calendar worked this year with Labor Day being so early, our season starts so early. I know there's high school football games that night, but the law doesn't kick in until the following week. So when the season starts that early, that Friday night is outside the SBA. And then you mentioned Black Friday, same thing. That's why we're playing in the afternoon, right? We're playing at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to be done by the 6:30 window. When if there's high school and even college games going on that night, we're done. Look, anything's possible. We're playing on a Wednesday, man. So anything's possible, but I really don't think you're going to see the NFL playing Friday nights and Saturdays during that, you know, SBA window, that college and high school football window. There are fans, there are labor pool, there are people, there are sport. You know, Commissioner Goodell gave a great quote if this is years ago now, when somebody was asking about, you know, the UFL and the XFL and the USFL and all that, and are they competition? And the commissioner said, that's not competition. Anybody investing in football is good for us. So we want a robust, healthy high school football program nationally. We want college football teams, you know, to be healthy and playing and generating revenue, not just for themselves and for their teams, but for the other sports and their campuses. You know, we want football to be healthy, and that probably is all we need to know about us playing on Friday nights and Saturdays. That's not where we're going to go that second September to that second December. I suspect we will adhere to the SBA as we have since, 1971? Yeah. Like, I don't think that one's going to be I think that one's written in pen, not pencil.
I feel great that we didn't take you from your kids' soccer practice this year like we did last year and you were in the car.
Always happy to do it.
But I feel bad that we kept you so long, but it's always a great.
I can go all night. I love talking about this stuff. I love talking to people that love it. And I hope that, you know, when you guys get the calls and everybody's like, they have it out for us. They hate us. Like, it couldn't be further from the truth. All the conspiracy theorists, if they only knew how seriously we took this, how much we cared. It's a 24/7 gig, knowing full well that nobody's going to be happy when you're done with it. But as long as everybody's just a little disappointed, you can take a little pride in knowing that we pissed everybody off evenly.
What's the next 2 weeks like for you before it comes out?
It's a grind. You know, we got to land a couple of planes here with, you know, a couple of these broadcast windows, including Christmas. See what happens in the draft. I think we've read all the mocks like everybody else has. But, you know, until these names are actually called and we see where these kids land, you know, thinking about this, that alters some of our approach to maybe an early season ESPN game for that team, or maybe rolling the dice on a division game for that team a little later in the year. But then it's a real sprint to the finish. With any luck, you know, the computers, the hardware, the software, they just keep searching through this infinite space and they just keep popping out new jigsaw puzzles. Here's one, here's one, here's one. Well, what's the difference between this one and that one? Well, this one's a little better for NBC. This one's a little worse for the Texans. This one's really good for CBS. But man, I don't love what we're doing to the Commanders. Like, every schedule is a little bit of yes, a little bit of no, a little bit of pros and cons. We kind of work off this leader in the clubhouse situation where there's always one hanging on the wall that the commissioner agreed. We could play that. That one's pretty good. I like it. I'm comfortable. But in the meantime, with the time you have left, can we address that sequencing of the Monday night games in week 7, 8, and 9? Or can we alter that 3-game road trip for the Texans? We could play that, but I don't love it. Can we maybe move one of those, you know, 3 road games against playoff teams, including a trip out west? Like, can we alter that 3-game road trip a little? So you set the computers off tonight trying to fix the worst thing about the leader in the clubhouse. You come in the morning, here's 6 or 8 or 10 contenders. They fixed what was broken on the leader. What did they have to break in order to fix it? And now, are we better or are we worse? If we're worse, leader survives, keep him on the wall, throw a new contender at it. If we're better, boom, new leader in the clubhouse. All right, what's the worst thing about that one? What should we try to fix tonight? Run him again. Run him again. We'll take every minute they'll give us until pencil's down. If that leader hangs on the wall for a couple of days, you know you're probably converging on optimality. We're probably not going to get much better given everything we set out to do. That might be the best we could do. Let the computers run another month. Maybe we find something slightly better, but I'm not sure we could wait until June to put this schedule out. People have to make plans. The teams have to book charters and hotels, book other events in their stadiums once they know which weekends are available. Fans want to buy tickets, start making their plans. Like, everybody's waiting on us. We recognize that. At some point, we got to get it in their hands. Schedule used to come out mid-April.
Yep.
Now it's coming out mid-May. Like, grateful for that extra month of search time. Not sure we should take too much more from the teams and the fans. So mid-May, same as usual, and it'll be a sprint to the finish. And every one of the finalists, every one of the contenders down the stretch are great. And like I said, they're all my kids. I love them all equally. Somebody other than me is going to have to pick the winner. And then you just kind of, you know, strap in and hold on and hope that, you know, your best laid plans pay off. And if they don't, you've got enough, you know, levers and you know, trap doors that you can pull where you can maybe slide some of those games that you didn't see coming into bigger windows and maybe move some of the teams out who maybe you thought were going to be a little bit better and maybe aren't having the season they want. There's no reason to embarrass them or ask their fans to go out and sit in the cold if they're not having the season they wanted. Let's move them to Sunday and let's find somebody who's played their way into prime time and go ahead and put that game there.
Well, I think the big takeaway, Matt, is we can tell Bills fans, get the coffee ready again, Mike Norvell.
Yeah, because, get the coffee. Yeah.
They still rate, and they're going to be playing at all different times and all different days of the week. Mike Norvell, thank you so much, VP of Broadcasting for the National Football League. We really appreciate it. It's been an hour and a half here, man. So I really appreciate your time. We could do it all
night. I could go all night, man. I love this stuff, and I love that you guys love it. And look, you always know where to find me, Sal. You're not shy. Anytime you need, anytime you got a question, whether it's just yourself or a viewer or a fan, and you're like, that is a good question. Why did they do that? You know, you can always find me. We want what everybody else wants, and that's the best possible schedule for everyone. And if there's something in there that we could do better, we're always looking to hear from people. We don't need them telling us what morons we are. We know. But if there's ever anything you guys need, you always know where to find me.
No doubt about it. Mike North, VP of Broadcasting for the National Football League.
Good seeing you guys.
You too. Thanks, Mike. We appreciate you. And that is Mike North. And we're going to say goodbye to everybody here on this episode of It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. Matt, it's draft time. We'll talk to everybody later in the week. NFL Draft Thursday night at One Bills Drive.
And then they can tell us that we're morons because we said they were going to draft the wrong guy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with 3 friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records. This is a national contest.